a private dancer, a sweet love, and no parking on the dance floor. It's R&B next on Tom and Hank Talk About the 80s. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Hank.
I know what I was thinking. I bet that's super annoying because every week we go, hi, Tom, hi, Hank, and then we both go, hee. We both laugh, but we laugh in the way that we laugh, which is silent.
I think it's like, nervous laughter.
Nervous laughter.
Yeah. Because I always feel really nervous.
I don't. It's like, do you?
I don't.
It's not like our studio audience. So this weekend.
I wish we had a laugh track. You know what?
I bet people
would. We're going to add a laugh track to
this. People would absolutely love it. They would love it.
Remember, like in the 70s, they had like the laugh track that you heard on every single sitcom, and
yes.
It was like the same one as on Laverne and Shirley as the Happy Days, and there was that one guy that go. Yeah, everybody knows who I'm talking about. If you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh,
it was on MASH too, because the first two seasons of MASH also.
It's interesting. To look at the shows of the 80s, and they were all these like three camera shows it's this glossy video, look, and now everything's doesn't look like that. It's it's single camera, where
handheld
and it's like in these sets, there's no audience. And I watch Golden Girls still. So you have a studio audience, but that was that speaker shutting off.
I feel like God just came out of the sky and was like, Tom.
It does have a dulcet tone.
It's very angelic.
It does, yeah. But I don't even notice the laugh track in the studio audience when I listen to Golden Girls or watch Golden Girls. But then you watch something like 30 Rock. Could you imagine if that had a... Hey!
I mean... whose idea was the laugh track anyway?
Some white guy.
Some dude was like, I know, it's not funny enough. We have to make people laugh by making them think they missed a joke. So if everybody hears the laughter, they'll be laughing too. What is that? Television. Weird.
Let's ponder it.
I'm going to think about that. We'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back. I want to do that every week now.
ABC needs to start paying us for that because that's a week too.
Or they'll sue us.
Ow. Ow.
You got to be real careful with your chompers and glass.
Evidently.
Well, let's talk about the 80s. I don't know why your voice would go up this high. Or in Southern. So this weekend I went to see a movie that had a lot to do with the 80s, and it's called Three Identical Strangers, and it's a documentary about, you don't remember them. You don't remember the...
They were strangers to me.
I just knew that you were going to do something like that, and I should have known better. Well, it's called Three Identical Strangers, and it's about, very quickly, it's about a kid who goes to college. This is in the trailer. Kid who goes to college. It's his first day there. Literally got out of his car, walking into it to find his dorm room. Everyone's saying, Eddie, hey, Eddie, Eddie, hey. Girls are coming up and hugging him and giving him kisses on the cheek, and his name's not Eddie, and he has no idea what anyone's talking about. So someone, not very long after being there, comes in, and he's like, he walks into the door and goes, whoa, what is your birthday? And he said his birthday, like July 11th, and he goes, hold on. And he calls his friend Eddie and says, I think you have a twin. They get in the car, ride up to where Eddie lives. He's not coming back to college. Sure enough, they're twins. Big story everywhere.
Crazy.
Never knew each other. Then, as everything's in the paper and their pictures everywhere, everyone keeps telling this guy, David, hey, David, why is there two of you in the newspaper? And he's the third. And they were triplets who were separated at birth in a children's adoption home, and it comes out that it's a whole plot to study these children when they're separated at birth.
A plot by whom, though?
By this doctor. And they name the doctor.
Mengele?
He is now dead. He is now dead. There is a woman who is in the film who was his assistant and says that she wasn't completely in the know about it, but she looks at it as a really positive thing. And this, you know, seeing a movie in San Francisco is very different from seeing it anywhere else in the world. I'm not the first person to say that. San Francisco is a very vocal group of people. And I saw it right at the Kabuki Theater, which is an amazing movie theater. And it's a very vocal crowd, especially on something like this, where it's, you know, a documentary and there's a lot of layers to it and a lot of psychology to it. And so there was a crowd of a certain age and, you know, probably education. And this, everyone is like, this woman is the devil. Oh my God, she's evil. Like, you're hearing it all around. But it's David Kelman, Eddie Gallard, and Robert Shaffrin. So it's these three young men. They became very famous in 81 about this. You know, at the time, none of the stuff about people coming to their home and filming them from the moment they were adopted up until they were like 12, none of that was talked about. They didn't really talk about it with each other yet. They looked at the similarities for them to gain some fame. So they looked exactly like, they have big wide smiles. They all smoked Marlboro Reds. They all had the same taste in women, older women. You know, they all wrestled in high school. So they really hung on to those little facts. And they were on like a big, huge, like special episode of Donahue, and they were in some big, like, huge civic
crazy
center. Yeah. And so it's just a really interesting
documentary. Do you think that's what happened to you
and I? Yeah, I do. I was thinking about that the whole time. I was like, we were separated at birth.
We really were. Somebody came up to me one day and was like, Hank. And I was like, what are you talking about? My name's Tom. And you're like, what?
And I had the same thing. And then we discovered that your chocolate got into my peanut butter.
It tastes great, though.
So, Three Identical Strangers. Find it. If you can find it, you should. It's really, really interesting. And it's also, like, super heartbreaking at the same time. And they're three doofy guys, but they're really cool. Two of them are still alive, and they are heavily involved in this. It's just really interesting to see their dynamic, but it's a cool thing to look into. Like, that could be a scandal that we talk about. But it's a really cool case to look into. And as I'm telling people about this film, they are saying, oh, I read a really great article like 3 months ago on Huffington Post about it. They wrote a really in-depth article, so you can locate that too.
Cool. Awesome. Guess we don't have to do an episode on it now. Thanks, HuffPo.
I'll just copy it right off HuffPo.
Like we do all of our episodes.
Basically.
That's all great, and that's also awesome. I love all that stuff you just said. Whatever you were just talking about is fascinating. Okay. But I'd like to talk about something more serious.
Oh.
Not really. What I want to talk about is I have this friend, and I've known him for quite a few years now, and I know him through World War II history, and from living history, and the vintage scene, and the Gatsby picnic that happens every year in the Oakland Hills, and I know he's been a listener since the beginning. And recently I was talking to him. He's getting married pretty soon. I'll be his DJ and for him and his lovely fiance, Laura. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I wanted to mention, give a shout out to Sean, because Sean, you're awesome and you're super cool. And
well, he listens to every episode.
Yeah.
And he is, I've never met him, but I follow him on Instagram, and he's just like the coolest dude.
He's
and
great.
Has such love for his kid, and it's cool.
He's great, and he does good things for the world, for his profession, and he's a friendly person, and he's very knowledgeable and very interesting, and he's kind of like a weird, he and I have all these weird interests that are very similar that I got through my dad, like obscure science fiction and things like that. Like, he usually knows about, and he'll post a picture on his Instagram and it'll be like, oh my God, I know what that is. And oh, that's so cool. And yeah, he was in he was kind of in the scooter, you know, scooter boy skinhead kind of mod scene back in the day and in the 80s. And I was, you know, of course, involved in that scene up here in the Bay Area. And so we have that connection, too. And anyway, thanks for listening, Sean. You're awesome.
Yeah. I'm taking for granted, but you do seem awesome. But I will hold you to the fact that I know you mentioned to Tom that we should get together, and we should.
Yes.
So if your name is not Sean right now, you should not be listening to this.
I propose Forbidden Island. It'll be great. Let's do it.
All right.
All right.
Done.
That's it for our episode today. Good night, everyone.
Oh, people would be so happy.
I know.
Like, fuck, another 50 minutes? What the fuck?
Especially after what I have to say.
Although someone mentioned to me the other day that they have a crush on our podcast.
Really? Mm-hmm. Interesting. Crush on our podcast. Well, not going to go anywhere.
Wait.
I don't know.
You never know. You never know, this podcast could become sentient.
I hope it does and stops because it realizes what it's done.
Shut down.
33 episodes must not go on.
33 is good round. Is that a round number?
It is. Well, if you draw
it. I don't know what a round number is.
You write it in a circle. Basically.
You can with 33 unless you make your threes.
Really long and curved.
There's. I wish I could remember. There's this great stand-up comic in LA, and she has this, oh my god, she has this great joke. She always says, oh, it's been tough the past couple of days, I've started making my fours different. That just always made me laugh so hard.
I've changed my fours and my threes.
Yeah, my threes used to have the flat line on top and then the sharp.
Yeah,
and then the circle.
What do you have now?
Circles.
Yeah, so mine's the flat on the top now.
Oh
yeah, yeah.
We inversed.
I've always had a love-hate relationship with five, because five I can never quite get right. And do you do the line down and the swoop and then the top, or do you do the whole thing in one?
No, I do the whole thing in one.
Yeah.
Now that's new. That's about a decade old.
Now, do you cross your sevens?
Yes.
Okay, so and I do too.
That's like probably in the last decade.
So I've been doing that because my dad did that, and my sister does it. So I've been doing that since I was a baby, since I could write. But they didn't like that in high school. They're like, you got to stop doing that with the sevens. And I'm like, why?
Really?
It's a fucking real seven. So I kept doing it. And it passed. Because you can't stop people from writing your sevens that way.
No. No, writing numbers is very interesting. Mm-hmm. I just tried to do the five in one because that's what I thought I did.
Yeah.
And that is not what I do. It just
so
looks
do
like an S.
So do you line down the circle
so I
and
do.
Then the line?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it makes for a more dynamic five.
Well, if you do the other one, you really have to. You can, but you really got to concentrate. And yeah. I have no time for concentrating.
I have no time for writing.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how interesting do you think this is to people?
I'm going to say 8.
Really?
Well, because everyone's thinking about it. And they're going, yep. Yeah, how do I yep. do that 5? And you know what? Maybe... You know what? Fuck this shit.
Yep.
Maybe it's time I change my fucking fours.
Yeah, I'm going to topple the fucking patriarchy.
Yeah, you know what? I'm changing my fours right now. Somebody's thinking that right now.
You're going to burn this town down, bro. Keep at it.
For everyone else, it's a 3 besides that one guy.
You're the luckiest man in the world, bro. Listen to my voice. Once again, I called somebody bro this week, and they looked at me like I was a fucking idiot.
Whenever I'm talking to Megan about talking to you, like I was like, bro, and she's like, what? Why? I don't get that. It seems so weird.
And we are so not bros.
We're
That's
not.
The thing.
Ugh. You know what? I'm taking it back. Taking back that term. I don't know.
All right, let's talk about something.
Else. Anything
else besides this. This is one of those moments where I look and I'm like, huh, we made fun 5 minutes ago that this was going to be our last podcast, and it probably will be because it's just so bad. Okay, so listen. And
things like that.
What are we going to know? I was about to say that. What are we going to talk about this week?
We're talking about R&B.
Yeah.
Talking about R&B. Groups and singers.
Yep, of the 80s. So it is a very particular
yes.
type of R&B, which breathed and moved through the decade, but like definitely there is a little like ding, 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 ding. There's a more electronic beat behind it and just amazing, great stuff. Like right away, I think of Cameo, right away.
Yeah.
I think of Cameo and the lead singer and like all the different, you know, these personas that other groups at the time were taking on, especially in hair metal. Mm-hmm. There were actual personas, you know, like I think most of those young guys kind of lived that persona in life, but so did other groups, you know? So you see, especially in groups, there's a lot more, you know, you try to define yourself within a group. So everyone, you know, especially in that decade, went a little wilder and
put more bandanas on their legs.
Put more bandanas on their legs and more see-through wraparound blue glasses.
yep. Hey, whatever it took.
Yes. So then you also had people who had hits in the late or the early 70s, some in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then in the 70s and careers throughout that whole time who really like did big comebacks in the 80s. Chaka Khan, who was, you know, huge in the 70s, had a little dip there and then came back in like 84. Someone I'm going to be talking about tonight, Tina Turner.
Yep.
It was like comeback of the decade. And it's just interesting to see. And also Diana Ross.
Oh, yeah.
She came back with a different sound, that legendary concert in Central Park that they showed live on HBO.
The legendary concert.
And that was Barbara. and it was raining. And so she's in the rain in this red leotard with a huge see-through cape flowing in the windy rain.
God, and I didn't know about that.
Just like out of control crowds in Central Park because she hadn't performed in a long time. And then there's, you know, the advent of new people, especially in the late 80s, we had a very different type of R&B came out, and that was with Vanessa Williams after her Miss America scandal. And then you had like these smooth, sultry sounds of Anita Baker.
Yeah.
And then a very different jazz R&B mashup of someone that I'm going to talk about in great detail, but that's Sade.
I was just going to say, yeah.
And she had such a distinct sound and has kept that still. She still tours. She has kept that sound, but she was so cool, definitely R&B, but in this really cool English
Very, very
way.
Very different, but.
And she had a deep, beautiful voice. So did Anita Baker. And yeah, so there's just all these really cool different types of R&B as the decade ranged, you know, from the late 70s to the early 80s up until the late part of the decade.
Well, and then crossovers into the beginning of hip hop and rap.
Uh-huh.
And that was an awesome time, you know, the late 70s, mid-late 70s into the early 80s and the beginning of that, you know, it's the beginning of something that happened in our lifetime musically that changed music history. I love that we were around for that, you know, like we were around for New Wave.
Yep.
And it's been very interesting being a child growing up, listening to this music and not realizing that someday we would look back and go, oh my God, that was changing history, musically speaking. Whoa. So, yeah.
Well, and it, you know, especially hip hop and rap, to see how that changed and, you know, to bring out LL Cool J and that type of California.
Cool Moe Dee.
Rap. And then you have this very interesting mix of the British music scene, R&B, and hip-hop.
Yes.
Which is Nana Cherry.
Stereo MCs.
Stereo.
Another big one.
Yep. And just these really cool, and there's some Caribbean beats.
Yeah.
In especially in Nana Cherry, she was someone that, it was the summer of 88, her album came out. So I was living in Fargo. I'd already moved out of our little town, and I was living in Fargo, downtown Fargo.
You were living in the big city.
Uh-huh. In an old, like, nightly hotel, like one of those, and that they had turned into apartments. Oh, and I had the coolest little studio apartment. I loved it so much. And I lived there for about a year. And it was called Roberts Street Place. And I loved it. I thought it was the coolest fucking thing. And I was living by myself. And I would go to Island Park in downtown Fargo and sit. I remember sitting under a tree and listening to the entire cassette tape of Nana Cherry.
Buffalo Stance.
Buffalo Stance. I don't think that was the name of the album.
But that was the single.
That was the first single. But every single, and it was so interesting, and she really did a lot of rap, and it was all about money, and it was about status, but in this very English way. It's a really great album. I recently listened to it, and it's still, I mean, it's dated, but it stands up.
I haven't listened to it in years. I used to have the single when I first started DJing. I had the 12-inch, the remix of Buffalo Stance.
Well, then in the 90s, I want to say like 97, 96, 97, her little brother, Eagle Eye Cherry.
Oh, I didn't know they were related.
Yeah.
Oh.
Had a big hit, right? Stay Tonight. Is that what it's called?
You
Stay
know, I didn't realize that.
Stay Tonight. And Tomorrow Will Be Gone. Come tomorrow. I'm saying again. You guys
we should
are lucky.
Just do singing this whole episode.
Oh my God, I'd love to.
So the song I'm going to talk about is this.
No parking on the dance floor.
I'm going to not do that anymore. I'm going to stop.
Well, you know, talking about Chaka Khan, she came out and it was the single that she put out was I Feel For You. It was a very, very big hit, and it was on the radio all the time. And this is just such, as we've spoken about before, this was just such a time for us to be listening to the radio constantly.
Yeah, I remember there was a radio in Mr. Post's class. Mr. Post was a former U.S. Navy SEAL who was a Vietnam veteran, and he was our art teacher. And he was an awesome dude. He was awesome. And there was a beatbox in the classroom, and the whatever pop station would be on, and it was usually, and I think I mentioned it many times on here, KWSS and KDON, KDON. Mm-hmm. And it was on one of those, and that was the first time I remember hearing it, and it starts off with that killer beat and that keyboard, and then you hear the rap.
And then it goes, so good. Well, it was written by Prince, as so much is.
And it's weird, I didn't ever know that, but now that I know it, I'm like, of course, it's totally a Prince song.
And
all of those songs that turn out to be like that, I'm like, yeah, of course those are Prince songs.
And you should hear him sing it. Mm. So he did a 21 night stand in LA, and I went once, and that was the night Whitney Houston was there and got up. And that, but his opening, Prince, but his opening that night was Chaka Khan.
Oh, cool.
And it was just like, and no one, every night, all 21 nights, it was someone different. So you didn't know what legend was going to be opening for him, and it was Chaka Khan. It was so cool.
Wow.
And then you see Prince perform for like 3 hours. It's a pretty good night.
Yeah.
And so it was written by Prince, and weren't you saying someone was on it?
Melly Mel does the rap.
Melly Mel does the rap, and he's from Furious Five, yeah. Like Grandmaster Flash and Furious Five. And then harmonica is...
Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder. Yeah.
I never knew that, but I knew it. As soon as I heard it, I was like, you know what? That could only be one person. And so I looked it up, and of course it was. And I was like, he played harmonica on so many, I mean, on his very first records when he was 12.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Little Stevie Wonder.
Such a good
right?
harmonica player. And he's got a sound to it.
So Stevie Wonder, speaking of him, had a huge decade in the 80s.
Huge. I mean, he just kept going all through the 70s. He never had a comeback. He just kept going.
No,
he didn't stop.
I mean, he starting in 1962, consistently, at least every other year, if not every single year, he had a hit.
Amazing.
And then he started off the 80s with a lot, but one of them is Happy Birthday.
So cool.
Which is that real boppin'.
Swingin'.
I don't want to sing a lot. I do.
You do.
But I don't want to. But I do.
He does.
Then Ebony and Ivory.
And, you know, now that I'm thinking of that song, there's a copy down at Rocket Reuse right now in the 45 bins. I think for 48 cents, I bought it. Because I can't buy every record that I see that's cool, you know?
No, that's true, but that's a good record.
It is.
With Paul McCartney.
Yes.
And
whoever that is.
Ribbon in the Sky, I Just Called to Say I Love You is where, like, that kind of, that sound that he had then for the rest of the 80s, that's where it started, was with this album. I Just Called to Say I Love You, and that was a number one hit on every single chart.
Wow.
R&B, pop, top 40. I mean, it was a big... And then in 85, he had Part-Time Lover, which is so good.
I mean, love that song.
If you guys could hear me sing it, I mean, it would bring tears.
If you could hear me do the chorus right now.
Then in 1985, Dionne Warwick put together the Dream Quartet to do a song where every... part of the profit, all parts of the profit went to AIDS research. Hmm. And it was really when AIDS was happening and starting. Once again, it wasn't called HIV at that point. It was called AIDS for the most part. So that was, that's what Friends Are For. And so that is Stevie Wonder, Dionne Warwick, Elton John, and Gladys Knight.
Oh, wow. So like throw Elton John in there. We can't think of anyone else. No, I love him. I'm just kidding.
Then he had like three or four other hits for the rest of the decade. It means every single year he had like three or four hits.
Amazing.
It's just so cool. And he still performs. He is still out there. He's still putting out records. He put out a new record in 2016. He started in 1962.
That's amazing.
As Little Stevie Wonder.
He was 12.
It was just Little Stevie, right?
Yeah. Or no, Little Stevie Wonder.
Little Stevie Wonder.
And then... in the, I think it was 1969, he put out an album under the name Yvette's Red Now. And if you look at it close, it's just his name backwards. And you're like, oh, they got me. Who's this cool guy? Wow.
Well, you know, he was also just known as being like a songwriter.
Yeah.
Too. And so one of my main picks tonight, and it's on my iPad. I don't have my notes, so my iPad is really high up right now. I can hardly see it with my reading glasses. This is going to be a real S-H-I-T-S-H-O-W. But it's Ashford and Simpson, and that's Nick Ashford and Valerie Simpson. The hit that they had was Solid in 1984.
And I will tell you now, I did not like that song. I fucking hated that song. I hated it so bad that I couldn't handle it. I probably would like it now because I love all things 80s. But back then, I could not do it.
Well, it's interesting because that was their big hit. They had really one big hit, and that was Solid. And it was, I think it's one of those songs where it's solid, and then there's the parentheses.
Yes.
Is it parentheses?
Yes.
And then it says, like a rock. Solid. Solid like a rock. I have to inform you what it sounds like. But so the reason that I wanted to talk about them was because some of the most famous, most popular songs of all time were written by Ashford and Simpson.
Amazing.
So they were a songwriting duo, and they essentially had two careers. One was this big writing and producing team. They did a lot of producing. And then as singers and performers themselves. And so they started their career in the mid-1960s, and they did some writing for The Fifth Dimension, Aretha Franklin, and Ray Charles. They wrote two of Ray's biggest hits, Let's Go Get Stoned and I Don't Need No Doctor.
Oh, wait, you're kidding me. I play that 45 all the time.
I don't need no doctor.
Well, I shouldn't tell everyone how amazing it is. It's one of his best songs of all time. And if you don't know that song, go to YouTube right now and look it up. You will not be sorry. It is fucking red hot.
And it's by Ashford and Simpson.
Wow, that's cool.
And so working with Ray Charles, who was obviously huge, brought Berry Gordy to know who that was. So he was the Motown chief founder. And so they joined the staff in 1966, and they were paired with the vocal duo of Marvin Gaye and Tammy Terrell. And they wrote and or produced all but one of the Gaye Terrell singles from all of the 60s.
Wow, no kidding.
So they did
Ain't No... I have a ton of those 45s.
So Ain't No Mountain High Enough, one of the most famous songs in the world, written by them. Your Precious Love, Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing. And You're All I Need to Get By.
Wow, I have all those 45s.
I'm sure you do. So they... then in the 70s at Motown, they were responsible for writing all three of the first solo albums of Diana Ross.
No kidding.
And they did a Reach Out and Touch Somebody's Hand. I mean, every single one of these songs are like held up in such high regard.
Yeah.
And they're still sung today by current artists in different ways because they're these famous, huge songs.
And it's almost like a thankless thing because nobody knows that.
Nobody knows that they wrote them.
Yeah, and they have that one hit, and people, oh, they're a one-hit wonder. Mm-hmm. But they don't realize that they're technically not.
And also, remember, when you write a song, it makes you very, very wealthy.
Yeah.
royalties.
Every time it gets played.
Yes, royalties on songs are a big deal. That's why Dolly Parton is one of the most wealthy people in the world, because she also writes so many songs you don't know. And I love that, you know, talking about this, we have so many more songs to talk about with them, but... to think about today, there are still those people out there today who are huge hits right now currently. So Sia, who's beloved, I mean, she has written most of the songs that most people like. Tons of Rihanna. For every major pop star, she's written songs. And also one of my favorite current artists, Jessie J, who's never really hit in America as much as she should. She also... has written most songs that you know.
Wow.
And Welcome to the USA or Party in the USA by Miley Cyrus, that was written by an English girl, Jessie J. So it is interesting to see that there are still so many people who have two separate careers, writing songs for other people and not getting all the credit for it, and then having huge solo careers at the same time of writing their own songs.
Wow.
And so she did Reach Out and Touch Somebody's Hand, Ain't No Mountain High Enough, and Surrender, which was on her, like, Boss album. And then, so they also worked with Gladys Knight and the Pips, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, the Marvelettes, the Dynamic Superiors, the Supremes with the Four Tops. So they did all of this really cool stuff. And then after, right at the beginning of the 80s, when Chaka Khan was having a little bit of a hard time getting going, Ashford and Simpson come in and write all of her songs off that big album.
Wow.
And then they also, do you remember Teddy Pendergrass?
Yes.
And then he had an accident and he was in the wheelchair. And after after his accident, they wrote his comeback album.
Hmm.
So it's just, they just have this rich, really rich history.
Define, you help define a sound that way. And
they helped define Motown.
It's amazing.
You know, all those famous Motown songs, most of them were written by them. And it's also cool to look at people who are so prolific and so good at what they do.
Yeah.
And they are, you know, obviously. So a couple interesting things. At President Barack Obama's 2009 inauguration, Ashford and Simpson rewrote Solid.
Oh, yeah.
And they wrote it as solid as Barack. And they dedicated it to him at his inaugural festivities. It was a big deal. You know, and they're an interesting couple. She was short and had braids. I'm sure she still does. And she's really cute, beautiful black woman. And then he was extremely tall and had very long hair, very long. Very,
did he have a mustache?
Very, yes.
Yeah, big mustache.
He had a big mustache, and then it turned into a goatee sometimes, like a big handlebar thing. And he was extremely tall, very thin, and had this long mane of
he had like
of
very
black hair. Yeah.
It was awesome.
And would wear white. They would wear white a lot. And so all of his shirts were like buttoned down to like his belly button.
With a medallion.
Yeah, with a big medallion. And he was super cool. And so Nick Ashford, passed away in New York City in August 22nd, very near us, 2011. 4 days before Valerie's 65th birthday from complications of throat cancer. And then in 2012, after she lost her husband, she released a solo album called Dinosaurs Are Coming Back.
That is so rad. And
Dinosaurs Are Coming Back Again. And it features the last recorded performance of Nina Simone.
Oh, wow.
And her second duet with Roberta Flack, as well as an instrumental version that she orchestrated for her husband of Ain't No Mountain High Enough, which is really sweet. God. And they were just like, you could look at them and just be like, oh, they love each other.
Well, the album cover for Solid is, you can see it there.
Yeah.
They're embracing each other. And
yeah. And they were together, they were together for like 40 years longer. And so, yeah, Ashford and Simpson. I know a lot of people don't really know their music. There's some really great music out there of them, and then also all the songs that they wrote. But they're a big part of music, and so you should know who they are.
You should. And now I do. Never heard of them before. No. That's not true. I know their songs a lot better than I thought I did. That's for sure. Because I have so many of those dang records.
Yeah.
That whole stack right over there on the bottom, by the way, right over there on the floor, that's vertical. Uh-huh. That is all Motown and Tamla records. The whole stack.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So I keep those in their own spot so they're easy to go through. Anyway, yeah. Do you remember a band called Midnight Star?
I do. I had to be reminded, but I can't wait to hear about them. But yeah, I do.
Well, I discovered Midnight Star through one of my favorite television programs of all time that we've discussed. We did an episode about it called Friday Night Videos.
Yeah, we did. It was on NBC.
Growing up with Kraftwerk and Tomita and Tangerine Dream, there was always something about a song with a robot voice in it. And to me, I always thought, that's the shit. I'd rather hear a robot singing in their cool Cylon Battlestar Galactica voice than anything else. So much better than any other singer in the world. That's not true. But, yes, so I discovered them from their single No Parking on the Dance Floor. And I was sitting there one night watching, and I was like, oh, this doesn't look like something I'm going to be into. There's a little skit at the beginning where this woman is they're in traffic and this woman's trying to park her car and the cop stops her and he gets out and he's like, hey, you can't sit still here, you got to get out of here. And she's like, but I'm just trying to. And he's like, you're gonna get a ticket. And then the song starts and it kicks in with this killer beat and super super funky and super 80s and super keyboard heavy funky beat. And it's a great video. It was almost going to be one of my picks for our videos episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It can be for volume 2.
I just love it. In fact, we should have watched it, but we'll watch it later. But yeah.
It's interesting because that, there's no parking on the dance floor, is very close to Meet Me in the Ladies Room.
Same song. Ashford and Simpson. But they formed at Kentucky State University back in 1976. They were pretty much like a parliament, George Clinton, Earth, Wind, and Fire style band. But the guy who created the record label Solar that they were on held a music festival in New York City back in 1978. And they played and they became instantly recognized. People fell in love with them and they were signed to the Solar Records. And they were great. They have three of my favorite songs from that time period of this particular kind of music. And yes, each one features a robot.
I was going to say, on all of them have a robot voice, yes. Don't they?
So No Parking on the Dance Floor, which was one of my favorite, came out in 1983. That was on their fourth album. Freakazoid was the second single from that album. And Freakazoid is really came at the time of the breakdancing era for me that I've been talking about recently and how much I love breakdancing and how it combined this European electronic techno with black R&B music and made a new style of music that connected to hip hop but wasn't directly connected to it. It was more connected to breakdancing. Their third single and their biggest one was off their fifth album from 1984. The album was called Planetary Invasion and the song was Operator. And Operator's also really great. It also has a little skit in the middle where the music breaks down and it's like like that kind of thing.
Oh,
and
there's so many good beats. I know.
And then this guy, he dials the phone here, which kids wouldn't know what is that is now, but he's dialing a phone and he's like, Operator. And he's like, hey, Operator, I'm trying to get in touch with my baby. And she's like, I'll connect you, sir. And he's like, thanks. And it's just a killer. He's like, Operator, this is an emergency. Like, I need to talk to my baby now. And that was just, I still play those records to this day. It wasn't that long ago I played one of them at the Swell Bar at one of my gigs. Mm-hmm. And I think next time I will play all three in a row and hit those people with that robot voice.
That would be really
good.
Hit them hard
with it. But they, you know, Reggie Calloway did all the production. He wrote a lot of the songs. Vincent Calloway was his brother. It was a large band. Melinda Lipscomb, Melvin Gentry, Kenneth Gant, Bobby Lovelace, Bo Wilson, and Bill Simmons.
Oh, yeah, because she had a lot of the vocals.
Yes.
She had a lot of the vocals.
A lot of the backup kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. She sang Operator, I believe. She did sing an Operator. I love them. I love breakdancing to their music. I had the LPs for a really long time, but I recently have been selling a lot of LPs in favor of space that I have my 45s, but I do have, because I know everyone's curious, I do have those three 45s on the shelf over there.
Sure you do.
I'm about to get up and play one.
Did you wear an Adidas tracksuit when you broke dance?
No, I couldn't afford that. Couldn't really afford Adidas. No, I wore parachute pants and a tank top. You know, a muscle shirt, I should say. And a lot of bandanas to make up for the lack of Adidas tracksuit.
You never wore OP, right?
I did. In the 70s, I was a big OP. I'm from Santa Cruz, bro.
Yeah, so you were. But I was in the 80s.
Yeah.
Long sleeve t-shirts with the sun and it said Ocean Pacific.
I used to love that stuff.
Oh my God, it was it.
Which brings me to Herbie Hancock, who was a jazz musician in the 60s and 70s who kind of crossed over into the 80s with a big hit called Rocket. Mm. And Rocket was another real breakdancing song and also had that same robotic kind of vocal in it, you know? I don't have that 45, but I do have the 12-inch single. If you find the 45, I need you to pick it up for me.
Okay.
Because I do want to have that.
God, that's so good. And wasn't that like a really interesting video? Wasn't it just gloves?
Yeah. It was like hands playing on weird keyboards, like robotic hand, hands with gloves.
Obviously they were against a blue screen.
Yes.
You know, and you could just see the hand, but it was pretty significant at the time.
But so I love that song. He had another hit from that album as well, and it's escaping my memory. But I do recall in Scotts Valley at Scotts Valley Junior High in 1982 or 83, in the winter time when it would rain, we had a big warehouse, you know, where the pavilion where the basketball games and things like that went, and they had all the bleachers in there. And so when it rained, that's where lunch would be held. And everyone would go in there and hang out in this big thing, and they would have the radio playing. And that is the first time I heard Herbie Hancock's Rocket. And I was like, fuck yeah. I fell in love. It's funny that I remember the first time I heard particular songs. It's because I'm amazing.
It is because you're amazing.
It's not. It has nothing to do with that.
The look in your eyes right then, it was very much like you were like negging me at a bar in the early 2000s, like Mysterioso or whatever his name was.
And then Cameo. You know, Cameo was another one. He didn't have the robot voice, but he had that hard funk, which was different than...
That's the way to describe it.
You know what I mean?
It was a hard funk. It was so good.
Yeah, and it was super dancey, and it was super dirty, and you had to fucking get down to dance to that kind of
music. And they were weird.
Yeah.
They were weird. Their music was weird. They dressed really... He wore a huge cod piece.
I do. He wore leather and cod pieces and boots and weird tank tops with studs in them. And he had that pre-Kid and Play fade. He had that cool hair that went up and was kind of, you know, cut, faded flat back, flat on the sides like that. And I think he was the first person, the first artist I remember to do that.
His name was Larry Blackmon. Blackmon, I actually think. Obviously not his real name. B-L-C-K-M-O-N. And so they still tour, and he still wears a codpiece. I'm showing you a photo right now.
I am fucking into that.
He's still wearing his leather chaps and a codpiece. No tiny little stringed tank tops for him anymore.
Not anymore.
But a cameo was really cool. It was definitely funk.
Mm-hmm.
Funk R&B, and they were, originally it was 14 people.
Jesus.
And they were known as the New York City Players. And so they changed it to Cameo, and because they kept getting confused with the Ohio Players.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a very well-known.
I have some early Cameo 45s. They're on a label called Chocolate City.
And yes.
And they're just killer. I mean, killer.
And... you know, it's like they're R&B and funk and soul and hip-hop and electronic.
Yeah.
And they were really, really cool. Yeah, so they were with Chocolate City and Atlanta artists. And so it was and is the same. There's been like 30 guys who have cycled through, but three of the guys who are in it right now, Larry Blackmon, Tommy Jenkins, and Anthony Lockett, were original.
Wow.
And then Aaron Mills and Charlie Singleton now, and then many, many past players. But they're still out there.
I love it.
In fact, in 2016, I think it only ran for like a year, but they had a residency show at the Westgate Las Vegas Resort and Casino, downtown.
I would love to go see that.
Like downtown. Like,
I'm still going.
It's not called Fairmont Street. I think Fairmont is one of the hotels, but whatever.
And then finally, to wrap up my robot singing, I was going to say trilogy, but it's a quadrilogy. Okay. Boy, is that really a thing?
I think so.
That would be Rockwell, Somebody's Watching Me.
Well,
because that also has the robot voice.
I was, when you said it, and I was like, oh God, I need to talk about Rockwell next. Oh my God, we just listened to that song a few weeks ago, like in my car, right?
Yeah.
And we were both like, oh my God, I remember seeing the video for the first time. It's such a good song, and it's got that
weird... It's a creepy video, too.
Yes.
It's a creepy 80s video. It's very, very 80s.
And he was a one-hit wonder?
Yeah. Well, yes,
maybe.
As Rockwell,
here.
But he had hits for his previous band called Radio, R-A-Y-D-O, back in the 70s. And I think their first big hit was I think it was 1979 or 1980 was their first big hit. It's a song called Get Down.
Okay.
It is boss.
Get Down.
No.
It's not that one.
No. It's like, oh, I can't even do it. It's so good. Bunk, dunk, dunk,
unk. That's the thing about everything that we're talking about in this genre tonight is that bass. It's that jangly down, down. It's so
funk.
Good.
It's funk. It's so good.
So good. Yeah, I loved that Rockwell song. Gosh, it's so good.
You know, and I always thought that's Michael Jackson singing the chorus in the middle, but it's not.
No, it's him.
But I was convinced. I was like, no, he's just not on there. And my friends were like, no, his name would be on there. And I'm like, no, he's singing without telling anyone it's him. Because look, he's on the same label. Michael Jackson is on Motown. Rockwell is on Motown. It all makes sense, you guys. And everyone's like, no, it doesn't. And it didn't. Although I'm still convinced.
So there's also like this interesting thing that happened. It was like probably 84, 85. So in this genre of the funk and R&B and other things mixed in, along comes Eddie Grant, who had this super interesting, like, electronic, reggae, funk R&B song called Electric Avenue. And it's such a interesting, it kind of falls in that Cameo thing of taking the genre and putting it on its ear a little bit,
yeah,
putting different elements into it. And so to have this real heavy guitar with reggae-inspired phrasing.
Well, Eddie Grant, he brought it something even more unique into it. He's from Barbados. He's from the island of Barbados. And so he, you know, he grew up, who knows what kind of music he grew up listening to in Barbados, but, you know, in the 60s and 70s. But, man, yeah, it definitely has, you know, there's a B-side to Romancing the Stone. Actually, no, it's the B-side to Electric Avenue, and it's called Time Warp, but it's an instrumental. And it's a really early sounding, it's basically a techno song. It's one of the first, real techno songs that I can remember. Yeah, called Time Warp.
Yeah.
It was just a killer, killer record.
Yeah, I loved him. It's so cool. So I'm holding something up in your face right now.
Yes.
Guess what it is?
I wish you would put it back in your pants, please.
It's my phone.
Because we talked about it recently.
So we talked that we were going to do an episode containing this movie. And this movie is going to be on August 22nd playing on the big screen, which we have to go see.
I'm so excited.
Okay, great. I'm glad you're excited. There's other films as well.
Oh, I see what you're putting in my face now. We're going to go see all of those.
Okay, so there, you know, there is one coming up next week, and I've never, ever seen it.
It's one of my favorites of all time.
We have to go see Three Amigos.
It is one of my favorites of all time.
I remember we rented Three Amigos, and it was on, and my dad watched it, but I don't know. I was
remember
being
that,
a temperamental teenager, so.
That documentary you just loaned me with Steve Martin and Martin Short.
Oh, yeah, not a documentary, but a taping of a live performance. They tour together, yeah, and do this fun performance. It's on Netflix. An evening with Steve Martin and Martin Short.
It killed me. I mean, I laughed at every stupid joke, and some of them were like old guy jokes, and I was like, brr.
Because Marty Short's so fucking funny.
He's so horrible.
And that's why I know I love it, because I love him, and I love, yeah, Steve Martin. I'm on Chevy Chase. He had his time in the 80s, and we'll talk about him. I'm sure there's a whole episode about him. But
that Three Amigos is his time. I'm just going to say, that's when he came into full
okay,
bloom.
We'll go see it. There's so many good ones. It's that, Great Outdoors, Romancing the Stone, and Vacation.
I wish we could see them all right now.
Vacation's
Wait, when do they start?
Tonight.
What are we missing?
A League of Their Own, which is in the 90s, all but right. I still would, yeah, I wouldn't have minded seeing, yeah, it on the big screen. It's kind of thrown in there, but then Three Amigos next week.
Okay, we're going to see that.
All right. Wednesday. A big kind of last one that we should talk about, and someone who's very important to me, I've seen in concert many times, and that's Tina Turner.
Mm, yeah.
And Tina Turner, please watch, I don't even remember what it's called. What's Love Got to Do with It? The movie starring Angela Bassett as Tina Turner.
So hardcore.
So hardcore.
God.
But watch it, because it's what happened. And so Tina Turner grew up in Anna Mae Bullock, famously, in Nutbush, Tennessee. And then at a very young age, met and married, and then became partners in business, Ike Turner. And it was Ike and Tina Turner Review. And they traveled the country, and they had hits, Nutbush City Limits. I mean, all these just amazing Ike and Tina songs. But they were in a extremely horrible, abusive, in every way, marriage. And What's Love Got to Do with It? I think it's 1992. And it is so good. It's such an amazing bio of, yeah, this woman. And so what we saw in the 80s was her picking up her life from, you know, they toured and toured and toured. All they did was tour the country in the Ike and Tina Review. And she did Proud Mary.
Mm.
You know, she's so famous for Proud, yeah, Mary. So when she left him, she said, I'm going to do this. I'm Tina Turner, and this is what I'm going to go out. And she performed those songs on her own. And she did hotels, and she did small little like hotel bars just to like work and get out from under his thumb and not, you know, she leaves him in a very dramatic fashion. And so what we're seeing in 1984 is a brand new Tina Turner.
Red hot.
Red hot. She's in her 40s. She's coming back with this signature, what became signature hair.
Yes.
That kind of honey blonde, spiky. Almost spiky wigs and hair. And in 1983, she released a single. She released a cover of Al Green's Let's Stay Together.
Hmm.
And it, you know, she sounded different. She sounded older and better, and it just kind of hit. And so in 1984, it's been called the comeback of that decade. She picked herself up from having not one thing.
Amazing.
And being an abused spouse for many, many, many years, overworking for decades. And then she came back with this humongous comeback, and she released an album called Private Dancer. And it's an iconic cover of her with that spiky hair and a real slinky dress and a black cat.
Silvery gray.
Uh-huh, silvery gray and red lipstick. And she just looks amazing. Yeah. And she just became, I think she was 42 when that record came out.
Wow.
And it was a phenomenon. Everyone was talking about Tina Turner. It's so funny. Because I think we talked about other stuff I watched on this night, but a few weeks ago, I think during movies or something, we talked about sex comedies. I said that my dad had a heart attack and had to be taken to the hospital, and I stayed at my cousin Diane's house and I watched all these dirty movies on Skinamax. Well, before I watched any of those movies, I saw for the very first time and heard for the very first time What's Love Got to Do With It.
Oh, wow.
The video for What's Love Got to Do With It that night. After we had been to the hospital. And I was like, this is so cool. And I kind of knew her, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had seen, you know, PBS used to run like her live concerts or something, you know, when she was with Ike. And this record just was humongous. It was just so, so good. And Private, the videos were story videos. Private Dancer was, they showed like the taxi dancers, you know.
I don't remember that video.
Dime a Dance.
Oh, cool.
That was the video. You know,
I don't remember
it was
that.
About,
I remember What's Love Got to Do With It.
And then Private
She's like walking
Dancer.
Down the street.
Mm-hmm. And she's walking, it's like obviously in a studio. And she, so big tours, it just got bigger and bigger. She actually even got bigger in the 90s, going really adult contemporary, still with her Tina Turner thing. But toured over and over and over. She is now a resident and citizen of Switzerland.
Wow.
And she is no longer a U.S. citizen.
Wow.
She married a man many years ago, I think, and has lived there for, I almost think, 15 or 20 years.
Wow, fascinating.
And so she relinquished her U.S. citizenship to be able to be Swiss.
Great.
And so something that... So, the popularity of Private Dancer, that album, the tour, everything that happened. She then was cast in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Such a good choice.
In 85. And she also, you know, she won a few Grammys for the album for Private Dancer. And it got Record of the Year for What Love Got to Do With It.
Wow.
That's the big one. And she did two world tours supporting the Private Dancer album. Over 3.5 years she toured for that album. And so she traveled to Australia to star opposite Mel Gibson in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. I mean, post-apocalyptic. This was real. This was the most stylized of those movies. They were a little raw.
Yeah.
And this one is much more directed and...
Yeah.
And stylized in her character. She has this blonde hair that starts way far back on her head.
Her outfit in that movie, it will kill you. You'll die.
And it's like chainmail, right?
It is.
And so she was Auntie Entity.
Oh, I didn't remember her name. Boy, I haven't seen that one in a long time.
And she was the ruler of Barter Town. Her performance was reviewed pretty positively and became a huge success.
Obviously. She was great. I thought she was great in it.
And she had, so she had the theme song for the film, which is my favorite Tina Turner song, and that's called We Don't Need Another Hero, which is a cool video. Most of it's taken from the movie. Mm-hmm. And then her kind of talking, you know, her singing is in character. Tina Turner to me is just amazing. I saw her and Cyndi Lauper together in the 90s, which was a really fun show. I love her.
She's great. And bless her for going through what she did and doing something different with her life and changing her life. She was
a preacher's daughter from this little town of Nutbush, Tennessee. Had like a street and then a church.
I mean, I would imagine a place like that has one street.
Yeah. And she became famous. And then when she was 42 years old, for a black woman in 1983, she became a huge success. I've always just loved her and admired her. And if you have never seen What's Love Got to Do with It, it is worth it. It's a really great, really well done, very harshly frank about domestic abuse. And it's just so well done. Lawrence Fishburne is Ike Turner, and he's great. So, yeah, Tina Turner. I'm glad I talked about her.
I am, too. Thank you for doing that.
You're welcome.
There's a couple names that we didn't mention.
Okay.
And I feel like they just need to be mentioned. Well, there's this group called the Jacksons.
Yes. And you know what? We'll do it. We'll do a Jackson episode, obviously, with Michael and Janet. And then the boys, all of the Jacksons, they didn't go out as the Jackson 5. They went out as the Jacksons.
Yes.
Because there was, I think, a couple more at that point.
Yeah.
And they did probably the most famous tour of the 80s, and it was called the Victory Tour.
Oh, man. I did love that record. I mean, I don't have it. Surprisingly, I don't have that record anymore.
So they released Victory, the record, and then toured on it, right?
Did I lose a box of records? Because I'm missing Pretty in Pink. I'm missing the first Eurythmics album, and I'm missing the Jacksons record.
I don't know.
Those are three LPs that where are they? Anyway.
So we'll talk about them because also Janet really had huge success because she was on Different Strokes. And then she released Janet, and then that really didn't go anywhere. And then Control.
Control is just killer.
Which like almost every single song on that record was released.
Well, I'm thinking it's kind of in that kind of category of like hard funk, like hard 80s funk, like dancey funk. It's just like
dancey, I think, is the key there.
It has so many like elements of industrial music in it. Last time I heard that song, I was like, God, that album. I was like, God, it's interesting how industrial it sounds. There's so much electronic going on in it. I loved it.
And we didn't talk about Whitney Houston today, but we will. Whitney will be on her own thing,
too. I feel
like
we always have to do the disclaimer, you know, this will be a part one. You know, because there's so many things. And
there's so many significant people that we want to do full hours on. I mean, Prince.
Sheila E. We've touched on it.
But don't worry about it.
Nona Hendrix was another one I wanted to mention. I kind of wanted to do a little piece on her.
She was in LaBelle, right?
I don't know. Where she's from?
Yeah, was Patti LaBelle and Nona Hendrix. Okay. They were all LaBelle.
And then I wanted to mention one more thing because it's just sort of an add-on that popped into my head earlier. But in terms of like the slow jam, soft sound of this R&B music that we're talking about, the Commodores, who you know were huge in the 70s, put out a song called Night Shift. Mm-hmm. And to me, Night Shift is one of the most beautiful and eloquent pieces of music in its genre. And it came out in 1985 on the Motown label. And it was a song about Marvin Gaye and Jackie Wilson, you know, two huge, huge innovators in R&B music in the 60s and more for Marvin Gaye as he went on in the 70s and 80s. But yeah, I just love that song. And whenever I hear it, and that opening keyboard, ding, 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 ding. It's just like, it just gives you a good feeling and you sort of relax a little bit. So if you're feeling like you need to chill out, put that record on right now. Have a listen.
And, you know, there's a whole nother genre that's included in R&B, you know, R&B pop. And that's where we'll talk about Whitney Houston, Lionel Richie.
Yeah.
A lot of other, Billy Ocean, all those guys.
And Kenny Rogers.
And Kenny Rogers, R&B pop.
Well,
we may have to do a Kenny Rogers Gambler episode.
I would love that.
The Gambler, and then the movie starring Dolly Parton and Dottie West. Remember Dottie West?
They also made a TV movie for Coward of the County. They did a TV movie for Coward of the County.
Coward of the County.
Do you remember that one?
Who sang that?
That's Kenny Rogers.
No.
Yeah, Coward of the County. And it's about a kid who
did it star Kenny Rogers?
I think it did.
He had a big TV movie career in the 80s. I think it did. We'll have to do a Kenny Rogers hour. Now he looks unrecognizable.
Yeah,
he does. He's had so much plastic surgery, yeah. Which is fine. You can do whatever you want.
His hair stayed the same color for 50 years.
It did. Well, we'll talk about Coward of the County on our other podcast, Country Movies.
Made for TV Country Movies.
We only had two episodes. All right. Should we get the fuck out of here?
Let's roll. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.
No, we say that every week. But here's the thing. Rate and review. And it is easy.
Here's the other thing.
It literally takes 2 seconds. You're all on your phones all day long. You're all at your computer all day long. You all have your phone in your pocket. Anytime it rings, you look at it. And
you
so
do.
Just take 1 second and go. And also follow us on Instagram because we post all kinds of cool pictures and our cool flyers, and we let everybody know what's going on and give you the scoop.
We do give you the scoop.
And if you want to know what we look like, that's really the only way to do it.
Well, sure. Or our live Chippendale show that we're going to be joining in Vegas.
We're opening for Tina Turner.
Yes. So you can also email us at tomandhankpodcast@gmail.com. That is tomandhankpodcast@gmail.com.
You can send complaints, hate mail,
yep.
Positive reinforcement.
Yep.
Maybe there's something that you want to know about.
Yeah, or something that we got wrong or something that we didn't include.
Well, that reminds me. So last week I was on our horror episode. I was talking about an artist and I don't have my notes in front of me, so it's all gone now. Okay. Like I have no idea what I'm talking about anymore.
Okay.
But I got two pieces of information switched on the man who did the models and the art direction for the two Dune miniseries. And so if you're listening to that and you're an expert, it's not fake news. No, not fake news.
Turned around.
It is a mistake. And I hesitated in the middle and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to roll with it because I don't actually know if I'm right or wrong. And when the episode was over and I reread my notes, I was wrong. Please forgive me.
That's a good apology, even though it didn't really contain any of the information that was needed. But still.
I did. I said it's something about something I said and it was wrong.
So please, yeah, it's really important for us. It helps us move up the charts and it helps us do really well on
iTunes. It makes us feel good too.
And it makes us feel good. And, but we really are appreciative. I'm so appreciative that everyone listens. We're bowled over by how many of you do. And, I think you should stay awesome.
And I think you should stay rad.
Bye.
Bye.